Hey, good morning. My name is Jeremiah. I'm one of the pastors here at Westbridge, and we are thrilled to have you here. Go ahead and grab your outline. That'll help you follow along with the talk this morning. You can take notes if you choose to. I also want to say hello to those of you who are in our parent viewing area. Thanks for joining us there. That's a great option if you do have small children you prefer to keep with you during the service. I also want to say hello to those of you who are checking us out online and engaging with us through that platform as well. Thanks for joining us. You can follow along as well on your smart device. If you have the Bible app, the YouVersion app, you can go to the bottom right where it says more, and then click on more and click on events and search Westbridge Church, and you can find this same outline available there. You can fill it out on your smart device, all that kind of stuff. So, awesome to have you here. Merry Christmas. Around this time of year, heading into the Christmas season, you often hear that song, "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year." And that song is especially true for young kids, because as soon as the tree goes up, they wake up every morning and ask the exact same question, right? Is today Christmas? Is it today? No, it's not today. Is it today? No, it's not. We're not even close. It's still November. And so kids are just really, really excited. And for many of us, when we look back on our childhood, Christmas really is the most wonderful time of the year. You couldn't sleep on Christmas Eve, right? Because the anticipation was just unbearable. You're so excited. All you could think of Christmas Eve was what? Anybody? No, baby Jesus, come on. Yeah, the presents, of course, the presents, right? And all you had to do was just circle stuff in the big JCPenney catalog and then hand that over to mom and dad, and they would give it to Santa, and he would bring everything, and it was great. It would just show up under your tree on Christmas morning. And one of the traditions in our family growing up was that on during the Christmas season, we'd decorate our tree, and then we would actually rent a Christmas movie on VHS from the library. We would check it out and play it on our VCR as a family, which was awesome. And for those of you who are in high school and college, you're like, don't have a clue what that is. So if you're like, VH, what? What now? On a VC, what's going on? And that's what we did, is we would go to the library, check out a videotape, and watch it as a family. And we love Christmas movies, right? This is the time of year when there's lots of fun Christmas movies. Just so we're all on the same page here, just kind of mass confessional. Count of three, shout out your favorite Christmas movie. Ready? One, two, three. Wow. Okay. I heard some Elf. I heard a lot of Christmas Story. That's amazing. By the way, here's an interesting piece of trivia about the Christmas Story, since you brought it up. Do you know that the name of the actor who played Ralphie? His name is Peter Billingsley. And this is him. This is Ralphie. Isn't that great? Now, did you also know that Peter Billingsley is in Elf? I bet you didn't know that. Check this out. There he is. Right? In fact, here's the side-by-side. What? That's him. Is your mind blown? I learned that this week and I was like, this needs to be shared. This is a Christmas miracle, okay? Like, that's incredible. And as much as we love all the music and the presents and the movies and all of the amazing things that make this, you know, the most wonderful time of the year, the very things that make Christmas so magical for kids are the very same things that can tend to make it so chaotic for adults, right? As you get a little bit older, it has the potential to ruin it for adults. All of the chaos, all of the traveling, the buying gifts and being with family. How many of you during this next season, over the next couple of weeks from now until New Year's, will be spending time with immediate family or extended family during this season? Okay, how many of you will be interacting with one or more dysfunctional relatives? Yeah, how many of you could not raise your hand because that relative is in fact sitting next to you right now? Okay, yeah, keep your hands down. And every family has one, right? I mean, that's just the reality. So if you can't think of anyone in your family, you might be the one everyone in your family is thinking of. So our families, though, can be sources of great joy and great pain. There will undoubtedly be some great food and some laughter and tender moments. And at the same time, there might also be that one subject that no one dares speak of. That thing that, okay, we we just buried that and no one ever brings that up. Or there might be a person who you dare not cross. Like, you never want to rub them the wrong way, right? Or there might be some tension or some baggage that's been there just beneath the surface for years, and it never boils up, but every once in a while, everyone knows it's there, but there's just this tension, and there's this undealt with issue, there's this baggage, there's this person you never cross, there's this person that you want to make sure they're happy, because if they're happy, then things will go well. Our world gives us all sorts of advice on how to deal with relational tension, relational strife, relational angst, just relational conflict. And one option is the Jerry Springer Christmas. That's where you get together with your family and you decide, man, this year I'm going to keep it real. And I'm going to speak my mind and practice the age-old family tradition of airing of grievances. And so you're at the table and someone makes an offhanded remark like, Mom, could you put any more onions in this casserole? And Mom goes from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. Steam is coming out of her ears, and everybody's going, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. Another option our world presents is the Gucci Christmas. That's where you just focus on gift giving and deep fried turkey and figgy pudding, whatever that is. And it just allows you to avoid dealing with any of the issues. Everybody just stay on the surface, right? Mistake the quantity of wrapping paper and calories and activities for the quality of relationships. And maybe you're like, well, we're kind of a hybrid. We're a blend. We're doing a kind of a Gucci Jerry Christmas this year. So first we rage on each other and then we give each other gifts. Like, maybe that's your tradition. But some of you have already experienced tension from Thanksgiving. Some of you still have a twitch from a few weeks ago. And Christmas is coming at you like a freight train, right? And so we end up thinking things like, I wish everyone would just get along this year. This is my mom's wish every year. This is like classic mom move. Mom, what do you want for Christmas? I just want everyone to get along. We say things like, I wish they wouldn't come so late and stay so early. Or I wish they'd leave earlier. Or we say things like, I'm tired of navigating around this tension or this weirdness. Or why do we have to talk about this every time we get together? This seems to come up. And there seems to be a lot of relational tension that is brought out during this time of the year. And we're expected to be filled with all kinds of positive emotions during this season. We sing about the God of peace. And yet for many of us, if we're honest, it's a season that is filled with anything but peace. It's a lot of tension. It's a lot of chaos. It's a lot of running around. It's a lot of, and sometimes just even the shift in schedule and the sort of the uptick in busyness leads us to be shorter with each other. And everybody has their coping mechanisms. For some, it's just wearing a smiley face to every function and event, and you just walk around, and you're like, I don't care what happens or what anyone says. We are going to be happy, darn it. And for others, maybe you self-medicate. Maybe you walk into the house, and you just hover around the eggnog. Daddy needs a Santa shot, you know? And everybody has their coping mechanism. But here's the reality. 'Tis the season for difficult people. 'Tis the season for strained family relationships. 'Tis the season for relational conflict, relational tension, relational angst. And how do we navigate not only the Christmas season? Because the reality is we might experience this during the Christmas season because of sort of the uptick in busyness and sort of the tension and the chaos of the season, but it's only bringing to the surface what's already been there. So how do we navigate that, not only during the Christmas season, but the rest of the year when it comes to family and when it comes to friends and when it comes to neighbors and coworkers? And how do you navigate this sort of relational tension when you experience it throughout the year, when you experience it with people in your life? And whenever we're in conflict with someone and we're trying to get our point of view across and they're trying to get their point of view across and we're kind of saying our point and they're saying their point and we're trying to listen, but we're really just building stuff up on the inside. It's because we want exactly what the other person that we're in conflict with wants. We really just want the exact same thing. Both parties. Anytime you are in relational tension, anytime you're in relational conflict, anytime there's two differing points of view, both parties want the exact same thing. And here it is. Number one, all of us want to be heard and understood. That's what we want. All of us want to be heard and understood. I want to be heard, and more than I want to be heard, I actually want to be understood. I want you to understand where I'm coming from. I want you to understand my point of view. I want you to listen to me and not just hear what I'm saying, but actually understand my perspective. And you want the same thing as well. And in conflict, we're saying to each other, look, we may not agree, but you have to listen to me. When there's tension relationally, we may not agree, but you've got to at least listen. You've got to at least understand my perspective. We might not agree on how to parent. We may never agree on this decision at work. We may never agree on what I should major in, on the direction my life is headed. We may never agree on whether he's right for me, whether she's right for me. We may never agree, but at least you listened to me. At least you did that. At least you listened to me. And if you have something to say, at least say something that lets me know that you've heard me. I can't really hear you until I feel like you've heard me. And you can't really hear me until you feel like I've heard you. And all of us want to be heard and understood. Now, here's what's absolutely astonishing about this, amazing about this. This isn't an American issue. This isn't a 21st century issue. This is a people issue. This is a human issue. James, the brother of Jesus, actually writes about this exact same issue nearly 2,000 years ago, and it's incredibly relevant to us today. And the wisdom that we're going to look at from James applies to us so much today. In fact, if you would say, I'm not even really a follower of Jesus, I'm kind of checking out this God thing, I'm checking out church, I'm checking out this whole, you know, religion thing, whatever you label it. If you'd say, I'm not a Jesus follower, you picked an amazing weekend to be here. Because even if you don't follow Jesus, you can take what we talked about today and put it into practice in your life this week, and it will make your life better. And it will make your relationships better, even if you aren't a follower of Jesus. And so James is the brother of Jesus. He's not found in any of the stories of Jesus, ironically enough. And that's because he never believed Jesus was the Son of God. He just didn't. And that makes sense. And we've said this before. Try to convince your brother that you're the Son of God. Not going to happen, right? And so he never believed in Jesus. And then after the resurrection, he believed. And he became known as James the Just. James the Just. He became the leader of the church in the city of Jerusalem. And he's leading the church in Jerusalem. And he writes a letter to followers of Jesus to describe to them, here's how to practically follow and live out the way of Jesus. And in this letter, he addresses this tension of wanting to be heard and understood. And here's what he writes. He says this, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Now, that word all in Greek is actually interpreted all. Fascinating, right? And it means everyone. Isn't that amazing? Be quick to listen and slow to speak. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. Now, I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking about that person in your life who really should be here to hear this. Right? But this is about you, and this is about me. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. If we stopped right there, if we just, okay, let's close in prayer, and you put that into practice, that one thing, quick to listen, slow to speak, it would revolutionize your relationships. If both parties did this, if every person you were in relationship with did this and you did this back to them, if you were all quick to listen and slow to speak, imagine if both parties decided, I'm gonna be quick to listen and slow to speak. I wanna understand them before I seek to be understood. Everyone should be quick to listen, which doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? Because how do you listen quickly? It's like, okay, James, quick to listen doesn't make sense. How do you listen quickly? How do you speed up hearing? And the reason he uses these two words that really don't go together is because he's trying to make a very important point. And here's the point that he's making. Number two, being quick to listen is an issue of priority. It's an issue of priority. So here's what he's saying. Your first priority, the number one thing in terms of sequence, the most important thing you can do relationally is to be quick to listen. Make it first. Make it your practice to listen before you speak. Be quick to listen, slow to speak. Which, if we're honest, is exactly what we want others to do for us, right? We want other people to be quick to listen to us and slow to speak. And James is saying, you know how Jesus taught us, do unto others what you would want them to do unto you? This is one of those things, James is saying. He says, this is one of those things. You want others to listen to you? Yeah, I want others to listen to me. Okay, you want to be understood? Yeah, I want to be understood. Then be quick to listen to others. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. And if you have something to say, if you have to say something, be curious. Ask a question. Don't use your ability to speak to try to get your position across, but rather use your ability to speak to try to understand the other person's perspective. Your responsibility is to be quick to listen and slow to speak. The longer they speak, the quicker you are to listen. And the more that you listen, the more you learn. Now, if you're a parent or if you plan on being a parent, what I wouldn't give for my kids to learn this principle and to apply this to their life as often as possible. In fact, I would say this, if you're here in the room and you're in high school, and the next time that your mom or your dad is talking and you feel like they are quick to speak and slow to listen to your point of view, and they're doing kind of the parent thing and they're kind of telling you, here's life and here's how it works, here's what you should do. Now, don't do it right away. You need to wait till after the new year so you can take credit for it. Otherwise, you'll just be like, oh, you just did that because Jeremiah said to do that. So here's what you do. You just say, Dad, Mom, I really want to understand where you're coming from. Could you say it again in a different way so that I could really understand your point of view? Your parents will pass out. Okay, it will floor them. They won't even know what to do. They'll be like, where's my kid? What's going on here? Nobody does that. Instead, what do? We argue, and we argue, and we argue, and we argue. And if you can just hit pause and be curious and listen and try to understand the other person's point of view, it changes everything. And I can tell you, as a dad, my worst parenting moments throughout the last nearly 16 years have been when I was quick to speak and slow to listen. It's been my worst parenting fails. It's when I was quick to speak and slow to listen. The times where I've had to go back and apologize to my kids is when I reacted instead of responded. It's when I reacted and I didn't respond. I didn't seek to see the world through their eyes. I was just quick to speak and slow to listen. My worst parenting moments are those moments where I've done the dad thing. And if you are in any position of authority, whether you're a mom, a dad, an employer, any position of authority, you're gonna be tempted to do this. Where it's this, okay, I've got the wisdom bucket, okay? And I've got the experience bucket, and I've got the age bucket, and I've got the insight bucket, and you don't even have frontal lobe development yet. So let me just dump all that on you. So you stop talking, okay, and I'm gonna take all of my wisdom and all of my experience and all of my insight, and I'm just gonna dump it all on you. And hey, where'd she go? How come my kids don't wanna hang out with me? Well, parents, husbands, wives, employers, you need to know this. You might be right, but you can write the person you love right out of relationship. You can be right, and you can write them right out the front door. You can write your rock star employee right out of the company. You can be right, and be right, and be right, and be right, and you will write the person that you're in relationship right out the door. Because I don't want to be lectured. I want to be heard and understood. You don't want to be lectured. You want to be heard and understood. And I'm willing to be open to your ideas if I think for a moment that you may partially understand what it is I'm trying to communicate. And you know this is true because you have watched your teenager walk away from you, eyes glazed over, and you're thinking, I don't understand. I know I'm right. I know that the wisdom that I just imparted to them is amazing. Why won't they listen to me? And James says, because you were quick to speak and slow to listen. You're not quick to listen. You're quick to speak. If you want to enhance the relationship, then you have to be quick to listen. You've got to do that first. Seek to understand before you try to be understood. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Quick to listen, slow to speak. And then he says this, quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Now think about this. Slow to become angry is both a decision and a result. If you are quick to listen, and if you are slow to speak, you are less likely to become angry. It becomes so much easier to guard against your frustration with any other individual because you now see the world through their eyes. When you stop long enough to hear someone else's story, it makes it much more difficult to dehumanize them in your own mind. When you pause long enough to say, let's have a conversation, I want to understand where you're coming from, you are much less likely to get frustrated with that person because you took the time to be quick to listen and slow to speak. And so James, here's his formula. If you'll be quick to listen, if you'll be slow to speak, if you'll listen and try to understand and only speak so that you can better understand, you will be less frustrated. And you will be less angry with that individual and with that relationship because you will have gained perspective and you will have gained the ability to see the world through their eyes. And it doesn't even mean that you will agree with their perspective, but you will understand where they're coming from. In other words, the longer you listen, the more you'll learn, the less angry you'll become. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry means the longer you listen, the more you'll learn, the less angry you'll become. Now, here's why this works. This is the dynamic in human nature that makes this possible. And you'll probably want to write this down because this is incredibly deep. Okay, you ready? Here it is. Everything that everyone does makes sense to them. Yeah, so I'll just give you a moment to catch your breath. Worked all week on that. Everything that you do makes sense to you. Everything that I do makes sense to me. That's why I do it, because it makes sense to me. And everything that you do makes sense to you. And it gets worse. Everything that everyone says makes perfect sense to them. And everything everyone believes makes sense to them. That's why they believe it, right? And so that's why if you're not a follower of Jesus, you will never feel judged here at Westbridge. I trust if you're like, man, I just don't believe in Jesus. It's just not where I'm at. I trust that you probably have a really good reason to believe the way that you believe. And so you're never going to be judged here at Westbridge. And when we catch ourselves saying things like, well, I don't know why they would do that. I don't know why they would say that. I don't know why they would believe that. What is the operative phrase in all of those? What's the common phrase that's being woven through each of those statements? I don't know, right? So who is the one who needs educated on why other people do what they do, say what they say, or believe what they believe? The person who doesn't know why they would do or say or believe that way. Well, I'd rather just be critical. Yeah, it's a lot more fun. But here's the deal. Everyone has a perfectly good reason for what they do, for what they say, and for what they believe. Just like you have a perfectly good reason as well. So if you find yourself asking, why would my son do that? Why would my daughter say that? Why would my wife believe that? Why would my coworker? Why would my neighbor? Why would my friend? Why would they say that? Why would they do that? Why would they believe that? If you find yourself asking why, then really, what is required in that situation is not a declaration, and it's not a mini series of sermons, and it's not drive-by guiltings, okay? What is required is questions. James says this, okay, I've got an idea. Why not be quick to listen and slow to speak? If you don't understand why they are doing, saying, or believing that, then I've got a suggestion, James says. Why not be quick to listen and slow to speak? Why not ask them and then shut up? Why not find out? Why do you think that? Why did you say that? Why did you do that? Because the more you know someone's story and their perspective, even if you don't agree, you can see the world through their eyes. And it builds up rather than tears down the relationship. You may not ever see eye to eye on that particular topic, but at least you won't damage relationship. In fact, James continues, and he says this, human anger does not produce the righteousness God desires. So here's what he's saying. Human anger or frustration at the other person, anger that comes from talking all the time and talking all the time and trying to get your point across and trying to get them to understand us without seeking to understand them, being quick to speak and slow to listen, human anger and frustration does not produce, it does not cultivate the rightness that God desires. Righteousness is a way of saying rightness. In other words, there is your agenda, and there is their agenda, and then there's God's agenda. And your agenda and their agenda might be at odds with God's agenda. Your agenda and their agenda, and as long as you're trying to be right and convince them that you're right, that's your agenda. And if they're trying to convince you that they're right, that's their agenda. And that's your rightness, that's their rightness. You're trying to connect your rightness to your words, and the other person is trying to connect their rightness to their words, and then God has an agenda. And James says, when you're fighting to be right and they're fighting to be right, you're fighting for your rightness, they're fighting for their rightness. Neither of those things, and you're getting frustrated and it's producing anger, and none of those things produce the rightness that God actually desires. Your anger, your frustration, your lack of understanding for the other person, your efforts to convince them that you're right, none of that produces the rightness of God. Neither of your rights are right. And here's why. Number three, we want to be right at each other, but God wants us to be right with each other. We want to be right at each other. God wants us to be right with each other. There's a big difference. I want you to throw up your hands and say, oh, you're right. And you want me to throw up my hands and say, oh, you're right, you got me, you're right. And James says, hey, let's just be honest. When you are in relationship with someone, if you win an argument, do you actually win anything? No. I mean, you win the argument, you're like, yes, I won the argument. Where'd they go? Where'd they go? Yeah, you won the argument and you lost relationship. How's it feel to be right? And James is talking primarily to followers of Jesus. And he's reminding them and he's reminding us that's not what matters to God. God doesn't take sides. He doesn't care which of you is right about whatever topic or whatever issue you happen to be disagreeing on. God wants you to be right with each other. He doesn't want you to be right at each other. He wants you to be right with each other. And when you look at the life of Jesus, he didn't come into the world to be right. And he's the only one who could have. Think about that. That would have taken 30 minutes. He could have just come into the world and said, okay, guys, I'm right. Let me tell you why I'm right and why you're wrong. Drop the mic, go back to heaven. But he didn't do that. Jesus didn't come to be right. He came to reconcile us to God and to each other. And he says to you and he says to me, quit being right at each other. Start being right with each other. Well, how do we do that? Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. Then he says this, so get rid of all the filth and evil in your lives and humbly accept the word God has planted in your hearts, for it has the power to save your souls. This phrase, get rid of, oftentimes the Apostle Paul in a lot of his letters and a lot of his writings uses this phrase, clothe yourself with. And he's sort of evoking this imagery of man, you, these are the things that you put on, like an article of clothing. And so James is really evoking the same imagery in the opposite way, right? So this phrase, get rid of, is actually the opposite of clothe yourselves with. It's to take that clothing off. James is saying, in the same way that you take off a coat, in the same way that you take off an article of clothing, you remove filth and evil desires, which in this context is interpreted as filth is this moral filth or this idea of self-righteousness or self-rightness. This idea that I know I'm right, and so I'm going to put myself above you. And then James says, essentially, you're walking around with this I'm right jacket on. And you just want the other person to know that you're right. And James says, you need to get rid of that. You need to take that off because it's causing you to think evil things about the other person. What happens when you're in conflict with someone? What happens? You start to write a story that isn't true about them, don't you? In fact, isn't this true when you see evil taking place in our world? There, and the violence and pain and hatred that we inflict on one another, it's because, well, I'm right, they're wrong, and someone somewhere along the way refused to take off the coat of self-rightness. Someone refused to set that aside and say, maybe we don't agree, but I at least want to understand your side. The way that we are able to inflict harm and hatred and violence and pain on one another is when we are able to dehumanize the other person. And the way that we're able to do that is by making sure we never hear their story, their perspective, and we keep the I'm right coat on. And what it does is it allows us to write a false narrative in our minds about them. And James says, you gotta take that off. You gotta remove that. When you're in the middle of conflict and you realize it's escalating, and you're convinced that you're right, that's the moment you gotta pause. You gotta take off the coat of self-rightness because you know where it leads. And because if you win, in the end, you lose. And so instead, James says, look, humbly accept the word that God has planted in your hearts. Take off self-rightness, put on humility. Here's humility. Number four, humility says, we are more important than me. We are more important than me. That's what humility says. James says, if you're a follower of Jesus, this idea has already been planted in your heart. Humbly accept the idea that has already been planted in your heart. James says, you already know how this works because this is exactly what God did for you. He's saying, guys, come on. God sent his son into the world for you. He put you ahead of himself. Being right with you was more important to God than being right. So I'm just asking you to do that for others. Step back into that basic truth that you embraced when you first started following Jesus and recognize God is simply asking you to extend to others what God has so graciously extended to you. And when you do, it has the power to save your soul. It has the power to save the part of you that lasts forever. It has the power to save relationships. It has the power to save that relationship with your son, with your daughter, with your spouse, with your coworker. It has the power to mend. It has the power to heal. It has the power to save your soul. If you will humbly accept, this is what God did for me, and so I am going to do this for others. You've got to accept and step back into what caused you to start following Jesus to begin with. So let's put it all together. Here's what James says. Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Human anger does not produce the righteousness or the rightness that God desires. So get rid of all the filth, the self-rightness, and evil in your lives, and humbly accept the word God has planted in your hearts, for it has the power to save your souls. This is so practical and so powerful. Don't settle for being right. Work to make things right and work to keep things right. And for those of you who are still trying to figure out this Jesus thing, for those of you who are still trying to figure out it's the Christmas season and you're exploring faith, for those of you who were a part of a church for a long time and then you walked away from it for whatever reason, and for you're just coming back and you've got some questions and you're trying to figure some things out, I want to leave you with this. Quick to listen, slow to speak is exactly how Christmas started. Did you know that? Quick to listen and slow to speak is exactly how Christmas started. This is exactly what your Heavenly Father did for you through Jesus. He sent his Son into the world as one who could not speak. Now think about that. He could have come as a prophet. He could have come as a teacher. He could have come. And instead, he came into the world as one who did not have the ability to speak. This is why I believe that the Jesus narrative is true. Nobody would make this up. You don't begin the story of a savior with a fragile baby who is chased out of their own country because of a jealous king. It's not how you start the story of someone who's going to rescue and save the world and reconcile all humanity back to God. But God sent his son into the world, not as a preacher, not as a teacher, not as a prophet, not as a famous author. He sent his son into the world as a baby who could not speak, as one who was speechless. And for 30 years, he did not speak. I don't mean he didn't speak to family and friends, but he didn't teach. He had nothing to say for 30 years. He just experienced life. The sorrow and the disappointment, the funerals, the persecution, watching the dominance of the Roman Empire invade his own culture, watching the effects that that had on his immediate family, on his extended family, on his friends, on his nation, on his culture, on their religion. And for 30 years, he listened and he experienced humanity. And then, after 30 years, he began to speak. And when he spoke, people flocked to him. And do you know why people flocked to him? It's because they felt that he understood. They felt that he understood them. They were amazed at his teaching because he did not speak to them the way that their teachers did. He spoke with someone who had authority. He spoke as if he was someone who had authority. He spoke as a person who had a different type of authority, and they felt understood because he was quick to listen, slow to speak. And people who were nothing like Jesus liked Jesus because they felt that he understood them, and he liked them back, and he invited them to follow him, and you have been invited to follow him as well.